sit and close her eyes and use her imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, it's the intrigue of I Was a Communist for the FBI, starring Dana Andrews. But first, on the lighter side, it's the Charlie McCarthy Show. The Charlie McCarthy program was the first major variety hour to use ventriloquism on the air. Edgar Bergen, born in Chicago in 1903, and Charlie McCarthy, born of a block of white pine about 17 years later. The story goes that one day in school, Bergen sketched the face that would launch 1,000 radio shows. Edgar Bergen and his dummy Charlie McCarthy were first heard on radio on Rudy Valley's Royal Gelatin Hour in December of 1936. Charlie was sensational. They were so popular that Valley's huge audience asked them to come back again and again. Jason Sanborn finally decided to cash in on the act's sudden fame by bankrolling Bergen in his own program beginning May of 1937. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear and the Charlie McCarthy Show. This program broadcast sometime during the Second World War with special guest star Hedy Lamarr. Another classic radio program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bose, I miss the Shadow Nose, Fred Allen's Alley Folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Burton Marr, J. Miss and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, Vodio, Dodio, Do. Radio, I miss you so.
Makers of Chase and Sanborn Coffee present Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy with William Gaxton, Victor Moore, Mortimer Snurd, Dale Evans, The Sportsman, yours truly, Bill Goodwin, our special guest, Hedy Lamarr, star of the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production Heavenly Body, and Ray Noble and his orchestra.
Melt, melt, melt on down. Well, Mr. Bergen.
Yes, Charlie.
Can I have a few words with you?
I suppose so. What is it?
Well, we've been together a long time, haven't we?
Yes, we have, Charlie.
Yes, we have, yes. And we're not getting any younger, especially you.
Well, that applies to you too, Charlie.
Yes, it does, I know. I'm growing out of my youthhood, but I'm not as mature financially as I ought to be.
So it's money again?
Well, in a way, yes.
Well, my unfortunate friend, do you mean to say you have no money in your piggy bank?
Not a sou.
Not a sou. Well, how does that happen?
Well, my piggy bank went to market once too often.
Oh, I see. Well, it's a tragic story, Charlie. A tragic story.
Yes.
And it touches me deeply.
It do?
Yes.
Do it go as deep as your pocketbook?
No. No, it would, Charlie, if I hadn't heard the story so many times before.
Oh.
You are always financially embarrassed.
Yes, it's true.
How is that?
Well, I come from a long line of short people.
Oh, that's it. Well, I would give you more money, Charlie.
You would?
Yes, if I didn't think it was wrong and dangerous.
How can a little more money be dangerous?
Well, there might be germs on the money.
What?
Germs.
A germ on the money?
Yes.
Well, that's a new one, yeah. Germs on the money. That's pretty good. If that's the case, I must be the healthiest kid in town.
Charlie, you're always asking for more money, though.
But, Mr. Bergen, I'm not asking for more money.
Oh, you're not?
No.
Well, then what is it?
Well, I feel that a man in my position should have a checking account.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what is your position?
Well, I'm flat broke.
You're flat broke. A checking account on 75 cents a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That?
Well, what will you think of next?
I'll work out something.
Yes.
I was hoping I might get my allowance for, two or three months in a lump sum.
I see. In advance.
Yes. You know, it might teach me responsibility.
Oh, I see. Well, I think it would, yes.
Yeah?
Yes. I think maybe we can do that, Charlie.
Yeah?
Yes. This will be a noble experiment.
Oh, it sure will, yes. You mean you'll do it?
Well, I'll think about it. I'll open a checking account for you and put in $12.
You will?
Yes. Now, that's 4 months' allowance.
Yeah. How soon can I have it?
Well, I'll open your account Monday morning.
Yeah?
Yes.
Woo-wee! Monday afternoon is going to be a one-man run on that bank.
But remember, that money has to last you for 4 months.
Oh, sure. Don't you worry, Bergen.
All right.
I'll prove to you I'm a good businessman.
Well, I hope so, Charlie. Then someday, why, you'll be a great help to me when I'm old and gray.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I won't do it. A smart crack now might cost me $12.
Yeah. Now, there are a few things I want to caution you about, Charlie. You must guard your checkbook.
Yes, sir.
And you mustn't overdraw your account.
Oh, no, sir, no. Well, there's one more thing, though.
What is it?
Is this bank good?
Oh, of course. I think it's good.
Yes.
Yes, I think they have a reserve of, I think it's around
$3 million. $3
million? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that ought to last me a little while. What are the chances of me hitting the jackpot?
No.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Say, Edgar. Bill.
Yes, Yes, sir.
May I have a couple of words with you fellas?
Now, don't tell me that you need money, too.
No money. Just a few words.
Well, I don't know. Shall we give Mr. Gaxton a couple of words, Bill?
Well, Edgar, I guess we can spare one or two short ones.
Sure. Now, listen, fellas. Now, I'm going to direct a picture, and I'm trying to find a leading man.
Oh.
You know of anyone?
Oh, well, yes. Probably just the type you're looking for, Billy. But you see, I'm tied up at Paramount.
Oh, really?
Paramount.
As much as that. Yes. Gaxton, I know you want me, but Charlie doesn't allow me to appear in a picture without him. It's just one of those
things. Yes, well, neither one of you would do, you see. What I've got to find is a tall, handsome, debonair, smooth-looking young fella, a gorgeous hunk of man, a husky Tarzan who will out-Tarzan Tarzan.
Hello.
Well, there's your man, Billy. Right there. Victor Moore.
Oh, no. You'd never do.
No, Mr. Gaxton, I know there's a shortage of handsome actors, so I want to volunteer on account of the shortage.
My dear friend, there's a shortage, not a famine.
Now, don't be too hasty. My relatives tell me I have the features of Robert Taylor, the voice of Cary Grant, and the physique of Tyrone Power.
Too bad it all comes out Porky Pig.
Well, I think I'm prettier than he is. But I'd like to get into Western pictures. Don't you think I'm the tough and rugged type that could bulldog a steer?
Well, you certainly got the face for it. Tell me, Mr. Moore, have you ever made a test for any of the studios?
Oh, sure. I made a test for a studio once, and they kept calling me for 3 days. But I never went near them.
Mm-hmm. Playing hard to get, huh?
No, I just didn't like what they were calling me.
Well, I'm going to give you a trial anyway. You see, the part I have in mind calls for you to stand on top of a hill and face the camera so everyone can see your big, beautiful brown eyes.
I got those from my mother.
Yes, you see. The women in the audience are spellbound and thrilled at your broad, manly shoulders.
I got those from my father.
Yes. As you stand there smiling, we see your glittering, white, pearly teeth.
I got them from a friendly dandy Travis.
Oh, Mr. Moore, let's face it. You see, you're not the romantic type. Now, look at your figure. You're so big around the middle, you don't even need a belt.
I know it. My pants establish a beachhead, and my stomach holds it.
Well, with that shape, why aren't you wearing a girdle?
My wife got up this morning and beat me to it.
Well, I tell you what I'm going to do, Mr. Moore. You might have hidden talents. By a strange coincidence, I have a scene from the picture right here. Now, we'll go over it together.
Me and you? Okey-dokey.
Yeah. Now, I tell you, it's a great story. You see, you will play the part of a strong, dashing hero, and I am a petite Russian princess.
You're a princess?
Yes, I'm a princess. I speak first, you see. You ready? Here we go.
Oh, my little Bublitsky, look into my eyes and whisper those three little words that mean comfort, bliss, and contentment. You know those three little words, don't you, Boris?
Yes. Scratch my back.
No. Let's come on now. Let's start again. Now, here we go. Come on.
Boris, my sweetheart, I cannot stand it any longer. Let us run away together. What time, Boris, shall I be ready?
Sonia, my darling, first of all, I must go in the house and shave Mother.
No. That says you've got to go in the house and shave. Mother will be here at 6 o'clock. Go ahead. No. Read the speech here. Read it right.
Sonia, your cheeks are the color of rose petals.
Petals. Yes.
Your lips are like wine. Your nose is continued on the next page.
Reading the directions. I've never heard such a bad performance.
Well, why couldn't you change it into a Western picture? That's where I'd really show you some acting.
But I'm not casting a Western picture.
Bang, bang, bang. Give me me boots and saddle. Bang, bang, bang. You old villain, give me them there papers or I'll tear up the baby. Bang,
bang. Cut it out. Wait a minute now. Listen.
Send back, you dirty cattle rustlers. I'm venomous Victor the Two-Ten Man.
Stop it. You hear me? Stop it. I don't want to hear another bang from you.
Bang.
I told you I didn't want to hear another bang.
Well, I had to empty the gun, didn't I?
Oh.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Dale Evans comes forth with a very interesting invitation. Put your arms around me, honey. Hold me tight. Mr. Goodwin accepts, Miss Evans. Fellas.
I have two eyes, two lips, two arms, and I have love to burn. Your arms around me, honey, hold me tight. Huddle up and cuddle up with all your might. Oh, babe, won't you roll those eyes? Eyes that I just idolize. When they look at me, my heart begins to float. Then it starts a rocking like a motorboat. Oh, babe. Never knew any boy like you.
In my arms, I just gotta get a girl in my arms.
Boy, are you bad. Hey, you're feeling pretty chipper this evening, aren't you, Daggett?
Yes. Yes, it's a lovely evening this evening. Lovely evening.
Yeah?
Yes.
What's the matter with you? What's that stuff you got on your coat? What's that stuff there, you know?
It happens to be perfume.
No.
Yeah. Eau de cologne.
Oh, is this so? Smells more like an afternoon in a glue factory. No.
That's all right.
Say, well, you're looking pretty sharp, aren't you?
Oh, thank you.
What's going on, Bergen? What's up your sleeve? What's on?
Well, you know who our guest is this evening, don't you?
Yeah, Hedy Lamarr.
Well?
Are you kidding, Bergen? You and Hedy Lamarr?
Yeah.
Why don't you give up?
Well, I will. What's so unusual about me feeling a little romantic?
Romantic?
Yeah.
Oh, nothing. Only aren't you swinging after the ball went by?
Well, now. All right, I admit I'm not a college boy.
Boy, there's a concession.
Yeah. But there's no harm in trying to recapture my youth.
Capture your youth?
Yes.
First, you better try and recapture your middle age.
No. My dear boy, age is not everything. It's how you feel. That's what counts.
Yeah.
Yes.
How can you say that?
Yeah.
You who've been going steady with a hot water bottle.
Now, wait.
Oh, I can't keep this. Oh, Goodwin.
Yes, Charles.
How do you like Bergen? He thinks he's going to go and, you know, get someplace with Hedy Lamarr.
Oh, really? Oh, well, now, aren't you a little optimistic, Edgar?
Well, confidentially, I thought maybe you boys would help me.
Help you with Lamarr?
Yes.
Are you mad? What are we, tin?
All right, all right. I thought I might even go as far as make it worth your while financially.
Yeah. Oh, well, now, that's different. Tell us more, good-looking.
All right.
I have always been on the side of truth and fair play.
Oh, no.
Unless there's something in it for me.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
By the way, Edgar, how much is there in it?
Well, I planned on giving you 50 cents apiece.
Yeah. Oh, for goodness. Well, you'll get just what you pay for. And cheap is cheap, buddy.
All right, all right.
Hello, Charlie.
Chickas, Bergen, here she comes.
Yes. Well, Hedy Lamarr.
Hello, Bill.
Hello, Charlie Wally.
Oh. Hello, Hedy Wally.
Charlie. Charlie, remember the 50 cents.
What?
50 cents, remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've made the dumbest deal in my life. Hedy, we've got a TL for you.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have, Hedy. We know someone who likes you very much.
Oh.
He's just crazy about you.
That's wonderful. Tell me about him. What's he like?
Well, he... Here's where we go to work, Goodwin.
Yeah. Well, Hedy, this man we're talking about, he's,
Yeah.
He's, well,
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you wouldn't believe it.
Now, stop teasing me, boys. Who is it? Is he unattached?
Unattached? Yes, he's practically falling apart.
I suppose he's dark and handsome.
Oh, certainly.
Yeah, watch it, Goodwin, watch it.
Well, he's, handsome in the dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a real pin-up boy.
Yeah.
He sounds more like a bent pin-up boy.
No, not at all. He's a fine figure of a man.
Yeah, yes, he has a nice figure. Mm-hmm. Hey, if you care for avocados.
And what a body. A fine blend of quality character and deep down goodness. So,
What is this? Hey, Goodwin, never mind the regular grind stuff. Let's get back to the drip, you know?
Charles, I'm dreadfully sorry. I was carried away.
Now, tell me more about this Superman. Is he the athletic type?
Athletic, is he? Well, once he swam the Mississippi River.
Oh, when was that?
The day they put in a toll bridge.
You know, I like a man of interesting moods. One who is quiet and conservative one moment and glamorous and dashing the next.
Well, he's a convertible model.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Slightly worn top.
Oh, I hope he's well read and a student of the classics.
Oh, yes.
Does he know Chaucer and Tennyson? Is he familiar with Lord Byron?
Is he familiar with Lord Byron? Only last night they had dinner together.
Oh, Charlie, he's dead.
No, he always looks that way. Oh, you mean Byron?
Yes.
Oh, I wouldn't know about that.
Oh, boys, it isn't fair to keep me in suspense any longer. You must let me meet him.
No sooner said than done. Oh, Bergen.
Here I am.
Oh, hello. Hello, Miss Lamarr.
Oh, so you're the one they were telling me about.
Yes, yes. I'm the boy.
Well, Miss Lamarr, tell me, how do you feel about our client?
Oh, it's no use, fellas. But no one can say you didn't try.
No.
Really, I admire you boys for your loyalty.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
To think you do all that for a friend.
Yes, for a friend. And 50 cents.
Oh, so that's it. You were doing it for money.
Well, I don't...
Now, I'm disappointed in all of you.
Well, but after all, Hedy, we were just trying to...
What wouldn't I give to meet a man who was just himself? Frank, honest, and unassuming.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Miss Lamar.
Why, Mortimer, you know, I was just saying I'd like to meet a man who was down to earth. Someone who is really simple.
I guess I got what it takes, haven't I?
Mortimer, come over here.
No, I'm close enough.
No, you're not. Come on over. I won't bite you.
I wish you would.
Now, don't be afraid of me, Mortimer. No. I only want to hold your hand.
Please
hold my hand.
Why are you going to do it, that's all?
Why not?
Well, I'll hate myself in the morning.
Mortimer, what's the matter with you?
What do you mean?
How can you be so stupid?
I got a priority.
Oh, that's something.
Mortimer, haven't you ever been out with a girl?
Well, sure. I had a date once.
Oh, where did you go?
Well, we sat on the front porch in a swing. Oh, why did we swing?
What else did you do?
Well, I looked at her.
Yes, you looked at her.
Yeah. You know what she did?
No.
She looked at me.
Oh, she looked at you, huh?
Yep.
And then what?
Well, shucks, ain't that enough for one night?
Now, ladies and gentlemen, a word from Edgar Bergen.
It was my good fortune during the past year to visit and entertain our servicemen in Alaska, the Aleutians, and Newfoundland. I saw them in the far-off outposts where they were living in anything but comfortable surroundings. But despite their inconveniences, I found them eager and anxious to do their part to destroy the enemy that is trying so hard to destroy us. That means that our men are ready to give their lives if necessary. While here at home, we are asked to do very little more than to invest our money in war bonds. We are not asked to give anything, but just loan our own government the money it needs to provide our men with the equipment and supplies they require to win this war for us. Every person who possibly can should buy one or more additional bonds during this third war loan drive. Ladies and gentlemen, if our men are to reach Berlin and Tokyo, the least we can do is pay their fare with bonds. We cannot afford to fail.
When we all get together again next week, Charlie will meet up with an old pal and archenemy, Charles Lawton. Since Messrs. Lawton and McCarthy don't always see eye to eye, we're looking forward to a hectic and hilarious evening. That's next week at the usual time. Plus the two Charlies, of course, Edgar Bergen and Mortimer Snerd will be on hand, as well as Victor Moore, William Gaxton, Ray Noble and his orchestra, and one of the finest singing groups we've ever heard, the Pied Pipers. This is Bill Goodwin saying goodnight from Hollywood's Radio City.
From sometime during the Second World War, it's been the Charlie McCarthy Show with special guest star Hedy Lamarr. In a moment, Dana Andrews starring in I Was a Communist for the FBI from June of 1952 as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
I Was a Communist for the FBI was a syndicated 1952 series growing out of the Red Scare of the late 40s and early 50s, starring Dana Andrews as an undercover agent, Matt Savetic, who infiltrated the top levels of the Communist Party and reported back to the FBI. Savetic, a real-life double agent, had written his story in books and national news magazines in the mid-1940s, and Dana Andrews gave a convincing performance to the radio version. The stories were packed with tension, producing plots written within plots, as Savetic's relationships within the party changed. The show was good radio entertainment, drumming up in its anti-Red propaganda right down to Savetic's inevitable parting shot. I Was a Communist for the FBI. I Walk Alone. We turn with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear with Dana Andrews starring in I Was a Communist for the FBI and American Kremlin from June of 1952. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
I Was a Communist for the FBI.
starring Dana Andrews in an exciting tale of danger and espionage. I Was a Communist for the FBI. From the actual records and authentic experiences of Matt Savetic come many of the incidents in this unusual story. Here is our star, Dana Andrews, as Matt Savetic, who for 9 fantastic years lived as a communist for the FBI.
In all these fantastic years, fear was my worst enemy. The average man in the normal course of events comes face to face with fear only a few times in his life. But I faced the terror of fear almost constantly for 9 years as a communist for the FBI.
Now here is Dana Andrews as Matt Savetic, undercover man. This story from the confidential file is marked The American Kremlin.
An early spring afternoon in a large Midwestern city. The sun has found its way through the haze that shrouds the downtown business section and is drying the remnants of a morning shower. I decide to walk from my rooming house to the meeting at party headquarters, an unobtrusive address on an undistinguished side street.
Cab, mister?
No, thanks, cabby. I'll walk.
I think you'd better ride, mister. Pin 4-7.
Seven is a lucky number.
You're clear. No one following.
Why the emergency contact?
Two top agents the MVD have been smuggled into the country. Their job to close any loopholes in party machinery.
Who are they?
We don't know who they are, what they look like. But so far they've been efficient. Too efficient. Two of our New York contacts disappeared. There's a chance these agents are here right now. You see them, we want them. Now don't waste any time calling your contact. Anything to report?
No. Okay, you can let me out. Two top agents of the MVD here to check on their own party members. They're never sure of themselves or the people who work for them and with them. For how can you really trust a man who's a traitor to his own country? It's still rather early for my meeting, but there before me is the party headquarters. Outwardly, it resembles some of the other faded and forlorn buildings on the street. But there, the resemblance ends. For this building is the nerve center of the entire communist network in this section of the country. This is the American Kremlin. Comrade Barstow? Comrade Barstow! The door to Barstow's office is open. I walk in. Barstow? Not here. Beyond this office, the printing presses. I start to call Barstow's name. But the words choke in my throat. There, above me, dangling like a limp cord of an overhead light, hanging and swaying from a pipe which runs across the ceiling, the body of Comrade Barstow. I look around for the box or platform which he used to raise himself off the ground. But there is none. The floor beneath his swaying feet is clear. This isn't suicide. This is murder.
Hello?
Yes?
Is it done?
Yes. I stagger wildly out of the building, gasping for air. Sure, I'm scared. I didn't recognize that voice on the other end of the phone. Let's hope I wasn't recognized either. Why did I answer it? Call it an automatic reaction. A phone rings, you answer it. Just like you see a body swinging from a pipe and you know it's murder. Except in this case, there's a frame attached to it. And I could be the picture inside. I can't understand why the building is empty. The presses should be rolling a symphony of inky lies, and some of my beloved comrades should be at the door. Of course. This is Sunday, and even a communist sometimes takes advantage of a decadent bourgeois custom, like not working. I walk around the block, and then I spot Comrade Kovar, a local party leader, entering the building I just left, the American Kremlin. I wait about 2 minutes, and then I walk back in.
Who's there?
Well, it's me, Comrade Svetik.
Quickly, lock the door and come back here.
I had seen only Comrade Kova enter the building, yet...
Comrade Svetik, this is Colonel Polanski, who is here from Moscow.
It is my privilege.
Open the door to the press room, Comrade Kova, so that Comrade Svetik may also see.
Pasta. Who did... Either my eyes are playing tricks on me, or else I didn't get a good look the first time. For there, under the swaying feet of Comrade Barstov, is a box.
Yes, Comrade Svetik. Barstov realized that any weakness in our party structure is dangerous to the entire cause. You may close the door, Comrade Kova.
Comrade Svetik, Colonel Polanski has asked me to recommend a man to take Barstov's place. I have recommended you.
I'm here to serve.
When the revolution comes, our strength will lie in the instrument of the workers, the trade unions. Your first assignment, Comrade Svetik, is the shipbuilders union in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. There's a train which leaves in exactly 40 minutes. You will be on it. Your contact is the waitress in the King Street Diner. Her name, Millicent Johnson. Comrade Kova here will give you specific instructions. About Barstov. You have seen nothing? You know nothing.
Wait for me, Comrade Svetik. I will accompany you to the station.
Oh, don't bother, Comrade Kova.
No bother, Comrade Svetik. Who knows when I may see you next?
He helps me pack. He helps me find a cab. He's too much of a help. He's right with me as we enter the railroad station. I buy a ticket. Look at the clock. There's less than 10 minutes to train time. 10 minutes in which I should get to a phone and tell the FBI that one of the two MVD agents is right here. But how to do it without arousing suspicion on the part of Comrade Kova, who is being most solicitous and most comradely. Comrade Kova, will you watch my bag while I wash my hands?
Sure, go ahead.
And 407.
Comrade Svetik, whom are you calling?
Oh, I was just checking the time with Meridian. The last thing I see as the train picks up momentum and speeds out of the station is Comrade Kovar standing on the platform and smiling goodbye. I've been cornered, boxed and shipped. 8 hours before the train arrives in New York. 8 hours before I can get to a phone, contact the FBI, and tell them the MVD agents have arrived. 8 hours in which Colonel Polanski and the hatchet woman on the phone could be in Dallas, Chicago, Los Angeles. You pick the spot. Penn Station, a canyon of noise and activity. I disregard the porter with the outstretched hand waiting to take my bag and head for a telephone booth. I call home to my FBI contact and reverse the charges.
Hello? What are you doing in New York?
I'm on my way to the Brooklyn Navy Yard, replacing a local comrade who was killed.
Details?
August Barstov, party courier. Murder made to look like suicide. The body was still hanging in the press room when I left 8 hours ago. Be careful how you check it. I don't think anybody knows except myself, Comrade Kova, and one of the two MVD agents you're looking for.
Name?
Colonel Polanski. I think his partner is a woman. What's my Brooklyn contact number?
Your Brooklyn contact number is...
Will it be, mister?
Hello, Millicent.
Hello, yourself?
Brooklyn isn't near Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh isn't near Brooklyn. We've been expecting you. The meeting starts in 30 minutes. I finish here in 10. I'll get you a cup of coffee while you're waiting for me.
What about a place to sleep?
We have a room for you.
Hey, Millie, how about some cybers?
Brooklyn headquarters is an innocuous three-story brownstone, a couple of blocks from the waterfront. A converted rooming house which boards all the local agents. I'll be under constant surveillance here. Is this by design or accident?
Ah, Comrade Millicent. Come in. And this is...
Comrade Svedek from out of town.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Where is Comrade Aachen?
She's due here any minute.
She, Comrade Smith?
Yes, Comrade Hedwig Aachen, one of our most brilliant party members. Direct from the Stalin Institute.
Are you discussing me?
Ah, Comrade Aachen. This is Comrade Svetik.
Here is Barstow.
I'm taking his place.
Comrade Smith, how did he get here?
Comrade Millicent brought him.
How do we know he's not an FBI spy?
He identified himself correctly.
So, but how do we know?
Well, this is childish. You can check me whenever you please. I'm here to carry out a mission.
Which is?
The Shipbuilders Union.
I'm satisfied. Comrade Millicent, you have contacted one of the union men?
Yes, Hans Martin. He's been a party member for 2 years, and he's anxious to do what he can.
Comrade Svetik, this is an important union. They are at work on some vital naval projects. So far, we have only been able to win over Martin. But one man in there is not enough. He will help you join the union.
When do I meet Comrade Martin?
He comes into the diner every day before his shift, around 3:15. You be at the diner tomorrow, and I'll introduce you.
There are other items on the agenda, so I just sit back and listen. I listen and look and catalog their faces. What is the connection between Hedwig Aachen and Comrade Barstow? Was she the voice on the phone?
There being no further business to discuss, the meeting is adjourned.
Comrade Svetik, may I speak with you alone?
What about?
Alone. Come into the hall.
What's on your mind?
Why did you kill Barstow?
What did you say?
Why did you kill Barstow?
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now back to Dana Andrews, starring as Matt Svedek in I Was a Communist for the FBI, and the second act of our story.
This was it. Fear again. Fear projected by the cold, deadly, accusing voice of Comrade Hedwig Aachen. Why did you kill Barstow? I had to stall for time. The best defense is an aggressive offense. I grabbed her arm and replied, "What did you say?
Why did you kill Barstow? Let go of my arm. You're hurting me.
Come on.
Let go. Let go."
What is the meaning of this?
Come on, Comrade Aachen. Repeat what you just asked.
You fool.
I said repeat what you asked me.
I will hear it from you, Comrade Svetik.
She asked me why I killed Barstow.
Comrade Aachen, you place yourself in a very bad position with such a question. How many times have you seen Comrade Barstow? And under what circumstances? Was there a romantic attachment
Comrade
between you?
Comrade Smith, you exceed yourself.
Comrade Smith, perhaps Comrade Aachen's suspicions might be alleviated by a long-distance phone call. And you might ask Comrade Cover why Colonel Polanski recommended me.
Colonel Polanski? Comrade Smith, I wish to withdraw my charge against Comrade Svetik. Good night.
The next morning, I use an empty cigarette pack as an excuse to get out of the house and call my Brooklyn contact. 3 and 4 are 7.
7 is a lucky number. Have you made contact?
I'm living at local headquarters. Nothing to report as yet. Did you hear from out west?
Party headquarters had a visit from the local building inspector, but everything was in order.
Did they find Barstow's body?
No.
Was Barstow an FBI contact?
No.
Okay, if he were, you wouldn't tell me. Any other contact besides you?
The shoeshine man outside the King Street subway station. Tell him you prefer a red polish. A deep red polish.
It's 3 o'clock, and I'm sitting at a table in the corner of the diner. And over in the opposite corner, a fat, paunchy individual blows the steam off a spoonful of soup. It's during my second cup of coffee that Hans Martin comes over to the table. Sit down.
You're Millie's friend?
And your friend, Hans Martin.
First, we got to get you into the union. There's a meeting of our shift tonight at 11:30. The business agent for the union will be there. You meet me at 11:30, and I'll introduce you as my cousin.
Where is the meeting?
In the warehouse off Pier 9. Don't worry, nobody will stop you. Just walk past Pier 10 and across the cutover, which you can't miss. Meet me at the entrance to the warehouse.
I walk out of the diner with Hans Martin, walk him partway back to the pier. As we pass the King Street subway station, I say goodbye to him.
Shine, mister?
I start to say yes, but as I look up, I see Colonel Polanski coming out of the subway. He looks straight at me, through me, and around me, and walks on.
Shine, mister?
Well, yeah, I prefer a red polish, a deep red polish. Huh. Well, 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 my cab driver from home, how come?
I had a feeling out there that you might be heading into something.
I can't get over the feeling of being watched. I sit back in the shine chair and let my eyes wander. Sure enough, across the street is a fat man who had been blowing steam from his soup spoon in the diner.
Anything to report?
Colonel Polanski.
What about him?
Can't talk. Being watched.
Now there you are, sir. Got a shoe, please?
As I walk away from the shoeshine stand, I notice that the fat man has disappeared from the doorway. Rather than walk the 4 blocks back to the party headquarters, I take the trolley. Was the fat man really watching me? Did I do anything to give myself away? Oh, nuts. I'm falling for the old commie trick that the guilty man will always worry. The innocent man will only be confused. As I start up the stairs to the 3-story brownstone, I turn around and freeze. There, across the street, is the fat man. I shut the door behind me and run up the stairs into the meeting room.
Ah, Comrade Svetik.
Colonel Polanski.
What is it, Comrade Svetik? You look perturbed.
I think I've been followed. He's right across the street.
Who?
A man who's been following me. Look. Polanski and Smith cautiously move across the room and through a parting, and the drapes get a good look at the fat man standing on the other side of the street.
Comrade Smith, will you leave us alone?
Yes, Colonel.
But this is no laughing matter.
Easy, Comrade Svetik, easy.
I watch as Colonel Polanski lowers and raises the window shade twice, and then see the fat man across the street come up the steps and into the brownstone house. A minute later, the door to the room opens again, and he waddles into the room and smiles at me with the lower part of his face. His eyes can never smile.
Commissar Turin, this is Comrade Svetik.
Commissar, I'm honored.
So, it is you who have taken Comrade Barstow's place.
This is the other member on the 2-man team from the MVD. This is the voice on the telephone.
I watched you handle your contact in the diner, and I'm very pleased to know that we have such workers in the party.
Good. Comrade Svetik, what have you arranged?
I'm to meet Hans Martin on the pier tonight at 11:30. He's introducing me as his cousin to the business agent of the union. I should have no trouble.
My dear comrade, but the test of a good agent is to always be prepared for trouble. Colonel Polanski will accompany you. In the meantime, I suggest you get some sleep. You look tired.
exactly 11, Colonel Polanski knocks on the door of my room and takes me down to the car he has rented especially for the occasion. He opens the back door for me, and there is Commissar Turin.
Well, come in quickly, Comrade Svetik. The night air is a bit cold. Comrade Svetik, you wonder why a commissar and a colonel should accompany you on such a routine matter.
My duty is not to wonder, just to obey.
Very convincing, Comrade Svetik. You should not have run out of the building where you found Bastov's body after you spoke to me on the phone. Oh, yes, do not look startled. It was you. And you should not have entered the building a second time and acted as if it were the first time you had seen the body of Comrade Bastov. And finally, you should not have called the FBI.
This is some sort of joke. I don't get it.
Oh, come now, Comrade Svetik, spy, traitor, fascist tool of the FBI. Let us put an end to pretenses.
If, as you say, I am an agent for the FBI, why do you accompany me to my meeting with Hans Martin? Why don't you just kill me now?
You have an appointment with him. If you do not appear, he will ask questions.
Commissar, you are approaching Pier 10.
Turn your lights off.
Why was Comrade Bastov killed?
Let us say he served the cause.
Served the cause?
Yes. To trap any traitors in our ranks. And we did trap you, didn't we? I shall put it all in my report tomorrow. Moscow will be pleased. Bear in mind that Colonel Polanski and I are both armed. Now we shall get out and keep our date with Hans Martin.
The shrill whistle of the tugs, a basso boom of the larger vessels, are playing a funeral dirge across the night winds of the Brooklyn waterfront, carrying the coffin to its final resting place. You think you get accustomed to staring death in the face only.
Where's that light coming from?
Drop your guns!
An FBI threat!
This is my cue. I make a dive for shelter behind some piling. I miss my target. Find myself choking. The water drags me down.
Choking.
Gasping, fighting my way up, I break for air. And I hear the barking of guns punctuating the stillness of the night. There's an eerie quiet, and then...
Betty, are you all right?
Just a little wet, that's all.
Here, grab this rope and I'll put you out.
Thanks. Where are Turin and Polanski?
We've got them.
Are they dead?
I don't know. The boys will find out.
How did you manage to get here?
We've had a stakeout on local headquarters ever since you arrived. The shoeshine man reported your contact, and when you got in the car tonight, we just followed. Did anybody else know of their suspicion?
I don't think so. But I'm supposed to meet a party member on Pier 9 at 11:30. What time is it?
Well, that's the 11:30 break now.
What do I do?
Tell him you slipped and fell overboard to explain your wetsuit. We'll take care of Polanski and Turin. Well, what are you waiting for?
As I make my way to Pier 9, the calm of the waterfront is as before. As if those gunshots had never been. As if Polanski and Turin had never been. But there will always be more Polanskis and more Turins. For this fight I'm in is a lonely fight. An undercover man who must forsake his friends and family for the false friendship of the comrades in the party. I must continue this fight alone, as I walk alone. This is Dana Andrews with a word about the story you've just heard. In this episode, as in all others, names, dates, and places are fictitious to protect innocent people. However, party headquarters, described as the American Kremlin, did exist. And similar places will continue to operate in this country until we won the fight against communism. Next week, another exciting adventure based on Matt Savetic's experience as an undercover man, a communist for the FBI. So join us, won't you?
From June 11th of 1952, it's been Dana Andrews starring in I Was a Communist for the FBI in American Kremlin. Well, that's all we have time for today, but join us again next week and invite a friend to listen to more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those thrilling days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination.